unlikely friendships and found families. The love from witchlings and my theater community. They don't crop me out of their Polaroid delusions. I think I know the right solution. Queerness contains multitudes, but never exists in solitude. Universe, we're a universe. I don't have to be so perfect. Pick up the flute and know I'm worth it. Universe, one song I feel like I wrote.
Hi, welcome back and happy Wednesday. My name is Jacob Kniep. I am your podcast host, and I am the founder and CEO of Outspoken Leaders. We are a nonprofit organization dedicated to serving and empowering all LGBTQ+ youth, young adults, and future leaders. You may have noticed that the beginning of this episode sounds a little bit different than what you may be used to. Well, what I've learned over the last couple of weeks of recording and editing these podcasts is that there's so much talent and so much amazing work that's being done out there for the LGBTQ+ community. You may recognize the name of this organization because the last two episodes we have also talked to other members of this organization. Today we are talking to Ryan Amador, who is a co-founder of the Future Perfect Project with James Lacine. And that little song you heard right before the start of this episode was him singing. And what he was singing was something that they had come up with over the last week of me recording this. As you may know, we've been recording these episodes during the coronavirus shelter in place initiative. Ryan Amador, James Lacine, and the whole Future Perfect Project have taken from being an in-person program to being an online program. And this is just one of the many great things that they're doing. I am so excited to share with you my conversation with Ryan today. And I'm so excited to, again, share the great mission of the Future Perfect Project. I appreciated talking to Ryan because he offered a different perspective than James or Julie. So, without further ado, let's get into it.
How are you?
Doing well, you know, ups and downs with the emotional landscape here, but keeping busy. How about you?
I am hanging in there. I'm about ready to explode. I've been in my house for almost 3 weeks now, and I'm just going crazy.
Are you walking at all?
I mean, yes. But so I do hair for a living, so I haven't been seeing people as much as I usually would. So I'm just going a little crazy.
No, I usually like to work and write on my laptop in a cafe, and I know that about myself, but I'm very much not a home like energy person. And my boyfriend who lives with me is very much a home person. So I'm realizing how much I guess I feed off of energy at a cafe more than I knew I did, but I didn't know as much as I'm learning.
Right. I totally get that. That's kind of me and my boyfriend too. He would much rather stay home, and I'd much rather not be here.
Yeah, exactly. Ugh. I feel the same way. And at first I thought it was going slowly, but now that I realize that this weekend is like the 1 month mark, I'm like, wait, that was actually fast.
It's crazy to think that we've already been in shelter in place for a month. Some of us have been in shelter in place for a month and a half. Time is just kind of flying by. But it's amazing work what Ryan and the rest of their team is doing. And I really wanted to jump into figuring out what they're doing and find out how they're kind of coping with, you know, being in place. And the way that I found to really figure out what they're about is to figure out who I'm talking to. As you guys know, the question that I really like to ask is a bullet point version of who the guest is, you know, 3 to 5 bullet points, just really figuring out who they are. So, of course, I asked Ryan this question.
3 to 5 bullet points of who you are personally and professionally, just so, you know, people who are listening will understand why they're listening to you.
I'm Ryan Amador. I am most known as a singer-songwriter and also a theater maker and performer. And I guess activist, which is always a hard thing to admit for some reason. And I've been making music since I was a kid. But I didn't make my first recorded songs till I was in college. And I've been releasing music ever since. And I also am a theater maker and was actually randomly in an off-Broadway show that got closed by this quarantine. So I'm back in the saddle with performing as well.
I know it seems like a simple question to ask somebody to give me 3 to 5 bullet points about themselves, but I think when you really break it down into 3 to 5 bullet points, you get the full picture of who a person is. And I feel like even just the few interviews that I've done, listening to people kind of describe and define themselves in these short little bullet points really makes a good impression. And I was so excited after I heard, you know, theater maker, activist, performer. When Ryan said all this, I was like, yeah, I'm so glad that I get to talk to him. So let's jump back into this conversation.
Let's start with singer-songwriter. You said you've been doing it since you were a kid. How did you kind of get into the music field?
Yeah. My entry point was always a fascination with pop music, I'd say. I was like a big, I started as like a huge fan of MTV Culture circa 1998 and onward. And I was like a TRL music video.
Okay, I just want to pause here real quick. If you are too young to not know what TRL is, I need you to pause this podcast real quick. Go give it a look. Go Google TRL, Total Request Live. Totally grew up on this, and it brought flashbacks back when Ryan started talking about it.
TRL, music video, nut. I skipped a day of school. I faked sick, like very committedly faked sick to watch making the video for Bye Bye Bye, which is a very fun fact.
Oh my gosh, I love that so much.
So that was my entry point, and I had like a boy band in elementary school, and I remember it was a big deal when I decided to go solo in 7th grade, and I had to like sit them down, and they didn't care. But I thought it was very serious and that we were having like a drama moment. Like a la kicking LaToya and LaTavia out of Destiny's Child. But so that was really, I think, where it all started. And so I started kind of copying that. At age 9, I was writing pop songs, all a cappella, and just kept doing it. And I'd make these track listings for albums and not even just have the, I just have the titles before the songs, and then I'd go back and try to write the whole song. So I remember when I was about 12, my dad took me in to someone who could like record things, and we started trying to produce the song that I had written called Home, which I later performed for the PTA moms, and they all started crying, which was hilarious. But I remember when we did that, we also did just like an a cappella record of everything I had written. So I have these 3 a cappella, like full pop song, like 60 songs at age 12 that were all like written a cappella. And I don't even have all of those CDs anymore, but I remember it being kind of amazing to see them all next to each other. And then I started dabbling on the piano. And honestly, I'd still say I'm more of a dabbler than a true player. But it was in high school I started like laying down my hands on the piano and just like putting chord progressions together so I could feel on top of them. And I remember kind of, I remember developing that relationship sometimes almost to an annoying extent for my family, because I would just repeat the same thing over and over again and sing like gibberish sounds that were almost a way of crying or like feeling what I was feeling as an angsty developing teenager into the piano. And then later those formulated into like actual songs. And some of those same songs I wrote in high school were like, were the songs I decided to finally produce in like 2011. And that set me off. And now I'm basically just, I'm a big addict of the recording process. And I love the like songwriting to recording process so much. It's unfortunately not cheap. So I, otherwise I would do it like compulsively. But it, I like that challenge because it also makes us decide what's worth, like it makes us refine it a little bit in that we have to like make it happen. So that's my journey.
Would you say that you first started professionally doing this in like 2011 then?
Yeah, that was when I first, I think that's when my first EP came out, and I started working on it at the top of that year. And it was, it had, it was born, I had had these songs and I would play them, but I actually went to college for directing theater. And so the two things, they've always kind of lived in me back and forth. One with music, very personal and almost like emotional and reflective. And then theater's always been more about like production and big vision. And I was always like a directorial person. I've had this dichotomy between the two. And it was actually some theater peers of mine who have both done very well lately. One's, they co-produced the album. So these two people that I knew in college sent a big pitch out saying, if anyone wants to record anything, we're producing now in our apartment. And one of them is Shayna Taub, who's like become a, she's about, she's writing the Devil Wears Prada musical with Elton John right now. And the other one was Justin Goldner, who was the guitarist for Dear Evan Hansen. So like, they're both doing well, but we all got in a room and just started recording this first EP, which was all songs that I'd written in high school and a little in college. And you said that I made your heart break and it won't mend again.
And that's just a little example of one of Ryan's songs. It's one of his singles. It's called Apology. As you can tell, he's super talented at what he does, and you will find out more about where his talent lies and where it comes from.
Okay. So, singer-songwriter, we got that. Theater maker, how did you get into theater?
Theater also started around age 9. I think I did my first musical when I was 4, but I don't know if that counts because it was not born out of any autonomy. But
do you remember what your first musical was?
Yes, it was Big River at age 4. It was this weird. We had a company near us that would I don't know, they would do shows with all ages, so like toddler to old actors. I think they thought it was, I don't know, a cool thing, but it was tons of people and they would just wrangle these kids the whole time. So yeah, Big River, I was this little toddler. And then I started like really doing shows in fourth grade, and I did 40 musicals by the time I graduated high school. And I was like sort of a, it was definitely like the thing I did was like, I was a musical theater actor. And I started directing in high school, and then I got addicted to that and decided to go to college for that. But when I went to college, I started doing some professional auditions and just slowly didn't think it was for me. They were going well, and I could see a life where that was what I had chosen, but you know, I was too much of a creator type to like just be in the audition circuit and trying to be on like a Broadway actor. Just something about it didn't feel like it was authentic to who I was.
Why in high school did you start directing? Was it just something that seniors did, or was it something that you'd always been interested in? Because it sounds like that was a big turning point in
huge. You know, and I still consider myself loosely a director. I just don't do it very much because I think I like to come at it from a creator side. Not just like take a play and do it or take a musical and do it. So right now I'm working on a musical about queer youth with James Lacine, which he might have talked about. But that's why I use the term theater maker. My dad's always like, what does that mean? People don't know what you're saying when you say theater maker. But it's because I've always felt like more all-encompassing. And if the piece is asking of me to perform or to direct or to write it, which I'm now doing, it doesn't even matter to me because I'd rather just like bring my whole self to whatever it is. I'm sure many people feel that way. But yeah, directing, honestly, I just wanted to do it. And I waltzed in. I was 14 years old and I waltzed into my middle school is what happened. And I went up to the director. I went up to the principal and I said, I want to direct our first musical. We haven't had a musical here. And he was awesome. And he went, okay, sure. And then I like figured out which moms would produce it. And it was You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, which is actually such a good one to direct because there's so much you can do with it. And then I think like 2 years later, I directed Damn Yankees with a cast of 55 middle schoolers, which I always think is bananas. But at the time I thought it was no sweat. But now I look at it, I'm like, what did I do? What am I talking about? So it was just something I knew I wanted to do. And then I went to college for it and learned so much more and had the best, so much guidance from people in the industry. And like one of my teachers in college was Rachel Chapkin, who just won the Tony for Hadestown. She's amazing. And so I feel really lucky. And I apply that same education. Like I said, it's all the same thing. I think so much of the world wants us to like name labels, which goes, you know, right into queerness, but I feel queer as a creator too. I feel like I take the same principles from directing and put them into songwriting and vice versa. And I've always seen myself living on the edge of theatricality and musicality.
I actually really love the saying you feel queer as a creator. Like, I don't know. I feel like I can relate to that so much. I just love it.
Cool. That's great. Cause I'd never said that before. So just came out.
So you're working on a show with James.
Yeah. So that's, we've been in development on a musical called Q2. Did he talk about that?
A little bit, not really.
So the first thing that happened in our collaboration was that James was traveling around the country and visiting high school groups. And for those of you who don't know, James Lacine is the founder of The Trevor Project. He's also an actor and a playwright. So he had just had an off-Broadway play that he wrote and was the only actor in, because that's what he does. He performs as many characters in one play. He was traveling the country with it and decided to start visiting high schools. And he was so amazed by what the generation has been up to, both in their identities as well as in their social justice. And he called me up and he said, we need to write something. So the initial idea was to write a piece with music. And we quickly learned that in order to do that, we needed to be completely engulfed into these young people that we were writing about. And so truly by the powers of the universe, we got a grant to keep visiting schools and develop a curriculum so we could it wasn't really a grant to write our piece. It was a grant to offer these students a space to create for themselves. And then we were just on the side, like absorbing what we were learning into this narrative. And suddenly we had, I always refer to them as like twin children. One was Q2, which is this musical like expression of what we were learning. And then the other is essentially an initiative of queer youth workshops around the country called the Future Perfect Project. And the two of them often feed off each other, but they're very separate in terms of what they're doing and what's happening. So we've been writing this musical for almost his phone call to me was like exactly 3 years ago. And we've been in development, you know, as writers, we're constantly rewriting. I'm coming back to my theater roots, and loving it and integrating everything I've learned from my whole life, I guess, into this piece. And it's on its way. And it's really about what we've been seeing. It's about 12 queer young people who meet in an online space.
Oh, I love it. What, I mean, I know that you guys traveling around inspired this show, but how did that connection happen? How did you and James first link up?
Yeah, we've been friends for a while. I had a song called Define Me that was about being undefined, really. It was about sort of what we do with labels and the inability to just see us as ourselves. And it was a duet with a wonderful performer named Joe Lampert, and we made a video for it. And before that video even came out, Joe and I performed the song at the True Colors Conference in Connecticut, which is the largest LGBT youth conference in the country. And James was the keynote speaker, and we met that day. And then he brought me and Joe along to do, he was creating an event also for queer youth. This was in 2013. He did an event at St. John the Divine Church in New York City for queer youth. We performed it again. And then James and I kept being friends. He was a big mentor to me. I moved to LA and Seattle and LA again, and then came back to New York when this project got underway.
Nice. Where are you from originally?
I grew up in Los Angeles in a small, not small, but I grew up in a suburb of Los Angeles called Palos Verdes, which is right on the water. It's like unfathomably beautiful, and I totally took it for granted because I was born there and didn't know any different.
And are you in New York now, or where are you at?
Yeah, I live with my boyfriend up in the Hudson Valley of New York, so we're about 2 hours outside of the city.
Nice. How's New York right now?
The sun just popped out after like a thunderous rainstorm this morning, so I'm confused. I guess that's how we all feel inside, is how the weather feels now. But you know, my friends in the city are going through something so different than I am being up here. And so I think the state, there's some wild statistics about how much suffering is going on in the state right now. But I think the bulk of it is because of New York City.
Yeah.
And we're going to take a short little break to hear from some of our sponsors. But when we come back from our break, we're going to hear more about Ryan Amador's last bullet point of who he is, and that is activist, ever since he met James Lacine. So, Outspoken Leaders is a nonprofit organization here in the Chicagoland area. We are dedicated to serving and empowering all LGBTQ+ youth, young adults, and future leaders. There's a couple ways that you can support us. One, you can make a tax-deductible donation on our website. You can buy some of our merchandise, also found on our website. Right now we are doing an End the Blood Ban promotion where all of the proceeds from any of those shirts, sweaters, stickers, magnets, anything in that collection, we're donating all that money to organizations fighting to end the blood ban for male who have sex with male blood donors. You can also sign up to volunteer with us. We are always looking for volunteers for our weekly youth groups and meetings, and we're always looking for volunteers to join our board. And lastly, you can listen to the sponsors. All money raised goes directly to serving and empowering all future leaders and youth and young adults in the LGBTQ plus community. And we are so excited to be able to bring you this podcast every week thanks to all of these sponsors. And you can find our website at www.outspokenil.org.
We're starting this party tonight, where people will be undefined and love who they want when the judgment is done and won't have to hide.
Starting this party right now, where people can shake off their doubt.
And that is just a little sample of Define Me by Ryan Amador and Joe Lampert. Beautiful song. It is actually how I first met or first heard of Ryan Amador way back when. So this next section, we really talk about activism. And one of the things that I wanted to make sure that I talked about before we got into this, because I wasn't able to talk about it with Ryan, is there's different forms of activism. And I don't really need you to think that the way that I can be an activist is start a nonprofit, is go raise a boatload of money, is go to all these rallies, but doing something as simple as writing Define Me and performing something that you don't think is activism becomes activism. Sharing an Instagram post can be activism, as long as you're doing it with a open, honest, loving heart and you're doing it for good, it is activism. That's just a little something I wanted to throw in there. Let's jump back into this conversation with Ryan.
So I guess that kind of brings us into your last bullet point about yourself is activist. Because I feel like that's a lot of what the Future Perfect Project is. It's just a lot of youth activism.
Yeah.
Do you want to kind of talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, totally. So it's funny, the word activist is so hard to own for me. And I think I've heard other people speak to this. I know activists who are like on the street and yelling all the time. And I know activists who are like dressed up at nice panels all the time. And I know activists who are photographers and don't ever use their mouths. It's a funny thing. And I'd say my biggest activist role right now is actually in a little bit more of a directory sense, which is as I'm very like project. I can really like run a project, which again is an approach I bring to making an album or this. And so I think when I think of my activism, it's actually more about organizing and like order and making sure the logistics go through. And I haven't yet like been born into a self that's like on the street yelling. And I think it's important if people are listening who relate to that, to think about like all the components of what's needed to like motion a cause forward. That like you don't have to be in protest on the street, that you could be supporting people who are in protest on the street, or you can be documenting things, or you can be reporting on things. So I think a lot of what we're doing with Future Perfect Project, which initially started out as just creating spaces for these young people to express themselves through their own storytelling and songwriting. We were taking in a lot from that, but now we're trying to shift gears and bring it into more of a reporting relationship so that we can document what's happening and bring it forward into the world so other people can hear what we've been able to hear. Because it's consistent wherever we go. And that's been the most incredible thing about this generation, is that probably because of the internet, they are way more streamlined as a culture and united, even in the boonies of Indiana, in the center of New York City, in Little Rock, Arkansas. They're all saying the same thing. They're all on the same page. And we've never seen that before in queer identity in young people. So the most marginalized person in the queer community, young person, who's like in the middle of a place and sees no humans around them who relate to them, they have the internet. So it's like a brand new world and universe, really. So that's what we're trying to represent in our musical, which is also a form of activism, you could say. But definitely now in our function with Future Perfect Project.
Would you have ever, you know, kind of growing up, would you have ever thought that you were going to be a queer activist, or was this just kind of, this just kind of fell into your lap?
This particular cause fell into my lap with James enlisting me to this cause. That being said, what's been so interesting in terms of my queer identity as an artist and as a singer, songwriter in particular, is that when Define Me came out, I saw it as like just another song about myself. I didn't see it as like activism at all. And I didn't see it as anything different than a love song that I had already released, like a few song EPs and videos and things. And I just thought it was going to be another thing. I didn't put any pressure on it. I didn't think it was doing more than just what I normally was doing, which is just reflecting how I was feeling out loud. So what's been so fascinating about it is, I guess, like my queer journey had to do with going to college and like I was repressing a lot, and then going to college and dating a guy. I actually dated a guy from my first month of college for 5 years, which is nuts. And then after we broke up, I finally was like able to experiment and explore more. But I think it's just been about speaking up about my experience that's been interpreted as activism. And I feel that way even today, though I'm far more aware of what people don't know. Whereas when I released Define Me, I thought this was all like normal for some reason. I think because I hadn't received too much hatred. Like, I didn't come out in my more conservative hometown, and I came out like in New York City. And so to me, it was like, okay, like I hadn't had to digest the discrimination. So I was shocked by how needed this song and video was. Does that kind of answer your question?
Yeah, it does answer my question. So that's kind of how my organization started. I had something when I was growing up that was very similar to what I'm doing right now. But then I moved. I'm in a conservative area now, but like I said, I do hair, and people who don't like gay people don't come see a gay hairstylist. So all of my clients are very like-minded. Even though we may not think the same, you know, religiously or politically, like nobody is hateful and nobody's like really hurtful. But when I moved to this new salon that I'm at, I took this new client. They came out to me as non-binary, started telling me about the stuff that they were doing in high school with other peers. And my first thought was, you know, just be safe. Like, use protection. That was my only thought. And they were like, please don't tell my mom. I don't want to get kicked out of the house. And I was just like, oh my gosh, wait, like this is still happening. So I really resonate with your story of like not thinking that anything is happening, and then it turns into, oh wait, this is activism.
Yeah, and entirely, that's the premise of Future Perfect Project, is we're just trying to get them to speak what they already know and the world they already see as possible, because James and I know the value of that in terms of speaking something into reality and how needed that could be, even if it's easy for them to express it. And so now we're just trying to amplify that expression out so other people can actually take it. Because the only reason Define Me did well all those years ago was because the director like knew someone at HuffPost and they featured it, and that press was able to like create the echo effect. So that, you know, we can see press as like, we need to get promoted, but it's also amplification, like a way to...
We heard a little backstory from Ryan during that last section about him and his queer journey, becoming this queer performer, this queer artist, and just, you know, really owning who he is. And one of the things that I love doing with this podcast is I love hearing everyone's coming out stories. Because whether it's good or bad, or, you know, maybe they haven't come out yet, everybody's coming out stories, I think, really make them into the person that they are today. And I think deep down, the coming out stories really, they really resound with the good that they're doing in the world. And Ryan's coming out story is a little bit different, where it's not necessarily a traditional coming out story in so many words. It's more of a sexual coming out story, and I appreciate that he was open and willing to share that with us. But I think, you know, everything that he was able to share does prove that he's just an amazing guy and just trying to tell his story and trying to help as many people as he can.
So do you want to share your coming out story, or you're not comfortable sharing?
Oh, totally. I'm an open book. yeah, it's not, I feel like it's not, no, it might be a good story.
Well, don't undervalue yourself. All stories are good stories.
A lot of my like self awareness had to do with like sexual awakening, which is why I feel like I don't talk about it too much, but I'll just say whatever I say, and it's all available. You can edit anything out. But I was like exploring sort of sexually with guys at like age 8, which is so wild. And then at 9 and 11 and 13. And then I remember going to high school and just being like, okay, that's all behind me now. Like there's so many girls I'm going to date. And then I was like thinking about who I was going to date, which was always very like, it wasn't like, I'm really into this person. It was like, who's going to be my girlfriend? And then I had a high school girlfriend for a long time. And what was weird, it's sort of a crazy story, but how am I gonna say this? So I was exploring with these guys at a younger age, and the guy that I was like doing stuff with at 13, and of course we'd go to school, all these guys are straight now, we'd go to school and like no one would talk about it, and like we wouldn't even like face each other. So I hadn't talked to this guy in like years, and then we decided to do it again while I had this girlfriend in high school. And so for a while I was cheating on her with a guy for like months, and I was having sex with both of them. And so what really got me to come out was that I started admitting that to people. Like I was also in love with someone who was a guy who was younger than me, and like obsessed, like in a sort of crazy state of obsession. So I had a girlfriend, I was in love with someone, and I was having sex with someone else. And I think I had a hard time with that. I remember kind of admitting it because I went into like a deep depression with it. Definitely had a moment of like suicidal thought, came out of it. But then still tried to like pursue it because I was trying to push down that feeling. And so I stayed with the girlfriend, repressed the feeling, but was still cheating on her. And I started admitting to like my closest friends senior year of high school that like I was cheating on her. Like I had been doing these things with guys, and I remember how scary that was. So my coming out had a lot to do with like, I'm with a girl, I'm cheating on her. And I had friends like help me through that so I could, I didn't know I was gay. Like it wasn't like I'm gay. Sorry, this is so scattered. I actually don't tell the story very often. It wasn't like I'm gay, I know I'm gay, which I feel like I've heard so often. And maybe listeners can relate to this, because for me it was very like, I like this girl, she's my girlfriend, I like her a lot. I'm in love with, I'm obsessed with this guy, and I'm like having sex with this guy. But every time I leave having sex with him, I convince myself that no, I definitely prefer girls, even though I'm doing it over and over again. So essentially, somewhere in my senior year, I broke up with her. She kind of probed me to admit what had happened. She like was so mad at me and hated me for many years, and maybe still does, because it was her body, and like she had opened her sexuality up to me in high school, and I was like literally ignoring that I was cheating on her. I never even thought I was cheating on her, because I would like put away the gay experience in like a shelf where that wasn't real life. And then the summer before college, and this just proves how much media can help, I watched all of 6 Feet Under, which is still one of the best shows of all time. And I had never until then seen a gay relationship in like a domestic partnership, and watching them go through normal things. Like, thank God for HBO, because they're always like letting those things come forward. But like, I had never seen it. And I had never seen a life that I could have, or seen myself on screen living a life that I wanted. So I didn't want to call myself gay, because I hadn't seen it. I didn't have any heroes or anything to do. Nowadays, I'm sure there's so much more to them for young people to see. But that show really let me consider it. Like actually be like, maybe I can do that in like a relationship way, in almost like a normal way, in like a domesticated partner normal way, which is what I wanted. And normal, I'm actually misusing my own belief in the word normal, but I just mean in like the domestic partnered home way, which I did want in a wife, I was able to see in a gay relationship. And so I went to college very clearly being like, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know. I'm open. And very quickly like fell in love with this guy, and we were together 5 years. So that's my coming out story. My parents were cool. Oh, sorry.
No, go for it.
My parents, most people responded pretty well. My dad, I think, had kind of anticipated it, but kept doing that, like, that thing of, like, there's still time. Like, don't close your doors too soon. And I tried stuff in college with like, drug stuff, and I didn't have to do it again. So there was that. But he came around, and for the most part, he's still not, like, a super active supporter. And my mom, like, cried for, like, 2 weeks because she thought I was, like, throwing my whole life away. And then I think as she realized I wasn't throwing my whole life away, she came like fully around. And thank God she had like a coworker. She's a teacher and she had a gay coworker, and that was so helpful because I was gone. So I think he like really helped. But yeah, that's my story.
So I have to say, I've talked to 4 people so far for this podcast. And how old are you?
How old am I? 29.
Okay, so you're 29. You're the youngest so far. But, you know, James, Julie Novak, who you know, somebody from Phoenix who I've talked to, and you have all kind of said the same thing, all different generations, but you all have said, you know, you wish you had seen more representation in media. And I just think that that's, I don't want to, how do I say this? But I think it's so powerful that there's more, you know, queer representation in media right now, because, you know, we're talking somebody who's 29 all the way up until somebody who's James's age, who have all said the same thing, you know,
yeah.
I wish I had seen somebody like me on TV or on the radio.
Yeah. And I think like now it's funny because I think I see like the music industry right now as being like queer owned. Like, I don't know what's going on, but like queer is the coolest thing you can be in music. Whereas when I said like 7 years ago, like I said, Define Me was like a big deal. and suddenly it's like Troye Sivan's the coolest person in the world. You know what I mean? So
I agree.
and it's so funny to me. Yeah, it's a quick shift. And then yet, I think we still ask young people what they want to see, and they still say they want to see it more. So I think it is, there's so much farther to go, even now, with what we could see, especially like more queer protagonists, more queer people of color. I think, yeah, but definitely it's improved.
Oh yeah, definitely. So you have mentioned a couple times that you're living with your boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you guys been together?
We've been together like almost 2 years.
Very nice. Have your parents met him? Do they like him?
Yes, everyone loves him, almost annoyingly so. Like, everyone's just quickly on board. No, it's great.
Is there anything else that you want to talk about? Anything that you've got going on that's like super important that you think more people need to know about? Anything that you need to plug?
So yeah, the Future Perfect Project, we are now offering online workshops as a result of this quarantine, but it may even last beyond this quarantine. They're really moving because even just a month ago, we didn't know we could bring queer people from all over the country into one space. Most of us didn't even know what Zoom was. So just watching all these faces. So if you know queer youth, if you are queer youth, also allies are welcome if you sort of take it on philosophically. We're offering that, which is on our website. And then, yeah, I think that's good.
Let's talk about what the what your workshops actually look like, because we touched on it a little bit with James, but I'd like to kind of dive deeper into what an actual workshop looks like.
So our in-person visits with Future Perfect Project are us going to schools, community centers, LGBT centers, camps occasionally, and either, we've always let it be very flexible. Sometimes we've done a 1 day or 2 day, and then most often we've done a full week, like a Monday through Friday workshop with the same class every day. And it's super simple. And really what we do is we get everyone talking and we try to not talk. It's not about us teaching. It's really about us holding space and letting there be a discussion between the people present, then us kind of guiding that discussion forward so that people can access the ways that their experience intersect with whatever we're talking about, which is normally about how the future really lives inside these young people. The future is coming into the world through these young people. So our job is to try and get their insides to come out and start to build our world, because we fundamentally believe the world they see is a better world for everyone. So that's why we're doing what we're doing. The online workshop is currently pretty light in terms of what it is, but it's beautiful nonetheless. So it's just Tuesdays and Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern for about a 90-minute meeting. Everyone comes, and on Tuesdays we have a discussion. We send everyone off with an art prompt. We give them tips and techniques via a message board. And then on Friday, the idea is you've made something, you've written a story, you've written about your experience, maybe you've written a song, and we come and we share it and talk about it a little bit on Fridays.
Love that. So what do you think the biggest difficulty in that first day is? Like, what is your hardest thing getting these youth that probably don't even know each other to kind of start this discussion?
Yeah, and it totally depends. If they know each other, it starts quickly. If they don't, there's a hesitation to speak. But, you know, what we've learned is to just let there be silence, and someone usually starts it off. I think the challenge is trust. And we heard from a friend of mine who's in the social work force. Trust is met expectations. So I think part of it is making sure that we're clear and we're not hiding anything from them. That we set up a space of trust, we set up a space agreement between everyone present, and we really try to create that in the room so that they feel willing to speak up. The craziest thing has been, in this move towards a podcast, we've brought like more audio equipment into the room, which I was extremely hesitant about. But how, the potential of that breaking the trust and making people more scared. And what it's almost always done is made them more articulate and more forward and more excited to share. And I think that's because they do want us to get the word out, and they want their voices amplified. So that's been beautiful, and I hope we can get back on the road to do more of it.
I hope, you know, once all this COVID-19 stuff is done, that, you know, maybe the Future Perfect Project can, you know, come to Chicago. That'd be great.
Yeah, we'd love to. We've been trying so hard to come. So that would, like, Chicago is such a wide space that I think it's been hard for us to figure out the, like, where to go. And so it's fallen through like twice. So we'd love to.
We'll get something set up. I believe in it.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
So last question. Where can people find you if they want to find out more about you?
Yeah. I have a website, ryanamador.com. I have a Instagram at ryanamador. I think those are the best places to find out things. Or Spotify. I like Spotify. And whenever I release music, it's definitely there.
Well, it was great talking with Ryan this week. And it was great that you guys stuck around till the end to hear the rest of it. If you want to check out more about him, you can find him on his website. You can also find out more about what the Future Perfect Project is doing. I'll leave that link in the description. Also, if you are a youth or an ally in the LGBTQ+ community, you can check out the Future Perfect Project online workshops. FAPOW, as they're called, if you may remember from James Lacine's episode. I want to give a special shout out to the Future Perfect Project for the opening sounds for our episode today. That's what they've been working on for the first couple of weeks of the online workshops. I really suggest, if you are a youth, that you go check out the Future Perfect Project. And then go check us out at outspokenil.org. Thanks, guys, for listening, and we'll see you next week. Have a good week.